It's time for TWiT this week in tech. Philip Elmer DeWitt, the Cranky Geek episode. Philip Elmer DeWitt, O'Malik, and David Corsi join me. We're going to talk about the five horsemen of the internet: Google, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, and Amazon. We'll also talk about the fact that Walmart buys Jet.com. Amazon responds by buying Jets. And a lot more. It's all coming up next. Good show on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 574, recorded Sunday, August 7th, 2016. Headless body in topless bar. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/TWiT and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/TWiT. And by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software. It's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/TWiT. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect files on your computer or server with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free without a credit card at Carbonite.com today. Use the offer code TWIT to get two free bonus months when you decide to buy. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news. This is going to be the Cranky Geeks edition.
Can you start that one more time? I was on the wrong camera. My bad.
No problem.
Sorry.
It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news. This week, the Cranky Geek edition. Three of my favorite TWiT contributors joining us at the roundtable. Philip Elmer DeWitt, a refugee from Fortune. I was going to call you a fortunate refugee, but I guess that's not quite the same. He is...
And Time Magazine.
And Time. And he's now got PED 30, P-E-D, his initials, 3.0 or 3.0.
Or Apple 3.0.
That's the official name.
Yeah.
But found at ped30.com. And it's all about Apple. And how's it going? Going well?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I have the freedom to leave town whenever I want to.
Yeah.
We can talk about that later.
There's a lot to be said for that.
Yep.
There may even be more to be said for that in November. Meanwhile, joining us to my right, we got O'Malik. Always great to have O'Malik. Formerly of GigaOM, now an angel investor, and I'm happy to say joining the podcast family at Pico, P-I.co.
Thank you, Leo, for having me again. I'm actually a professional investor at True Ventures now.
Oh.
Not angel.
Not an angel. You're the real deal. You got money to burn.
No, not really.
That's great. You were an angel for a long time, right?
No. Never was an angel.
Never early stage? You were always...
No, I just went professional.
Went pro at a young age. He dropped out of college to go pro.
I wish.
And we'll find out...
I was young.
We'll find out more about Pico in a little bit. Also joining us, my old buddy, Dave Corsi. David is...
Hello.
Long. Hey! At Corsi.com.
I have nothing to sell anyone.
Isn't that nice?
I have nothing. I don't have a blog for you to read. I don't have a podcast.
I got nothing.
I have nothing.
I got nothing.
Here. I'm here.
That means you're here for the love of it.
The love of technology and the love of the affable Leo Laporte.
Thank you.
And the free mic, we hope.
Yeah, he's lobbying for a free mic. David, before the show began, he said, how many times do you have to appear on the show to get the PR-40? Well, David will get you one right away.
Well, hey, Ohm has one. I figured, you know.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Fair enough. Hey, let's start with the sad stories. And actually, a really shocking sad story earlier this week. The man who founded Slingbox, Blake Krikorian, who is much beloved, I think, at Silicon Valley, passed away suddenly at the age of 48. He was surfing. Ohm, you were a friend. You knew him.
Yeah, I did. I was quite shocked by his passing. And I think, you know, Blake and I met, you know, not too long ago, 2004, when he was doing Sling Media. He had just started Sling Media at least that's what he told me. And we talked a little bit about, you know, what comes after TiVo, and we talked about place shifting and just became friends. I think, you know, your editors tell you not to become friends with your sources, and in this case, I knew he was going to be his friend before he was a source, and like literally that's how our lives turned out to be. You know, when I got sick, you know, I had my own heart condition, and Blake would come pretty often to the city, spend hours at length with me and just keep me company sitting in a Starbucks talking about tech, and we would gossip about things and what the future looked like. And, you know, that's what he was, a guy who gave everyone everything he had. And, like, he just was one of the good guys. More importantly, you know, he was a 10X engineer, software, hardware. He could do it all. Think about it. In 2004, he made, you know, place shifting happen. I mean, this is a world before, you know, APIs and internet connectivity, which was pervasive, and cheap computers and cheap, you know, processors. This guy just hacked it all together. I mean, it takes a very special person to do that. And he was, you know, he was the old school Silicon Valley guy, which was like the value system was not only to win yourself, but do it with technology and do it with others and always help others. This guy just helped everyone. I don't think he ever had a negative thing to say about anyone. He would basically, you know, give you a shirt off his shoulder, off his back, if he felt you could benefit from it. Really great guy. And we became good friends. And he actually got very mad at me for leaving journalism. And he said, like, why would you do that? And you know, I think sometimes other people know you better than you do. And he was one of those people, like really special human being. And, you know, I kind of was, it took me 2 days to come to terms with the whole thing. And, you know, I can't
tell
you.
Such a shock at that age.
What a loss it is for the community, his family, everybody. Like, he's just truly one of the great ones.
Well, he will be missed. His family leaves behind two daughters and a wife. And I don't know how old his daughters are, but given his age, they're probably not very old. So
even
a greater tragedy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would just say they don't make people like him anymore. You know, I've been around the Valley like you and Philip and David for a very long time. This is the old school, capable, you know, very capable person. Just amazing.
Yeah. We need more engineers running companies, frankly, if you ask me. People with technology backgrounds. Also passing this week at a little bit more of a senior age, Seymour Papert. He was 88. He invented Lego. And if you ever used Lego Mindstorms were named after his seminal book, Mindstorm, Children, Computers, and Powerful Ideas. He was a genius in the early days of AI and very inspirational. You knew him, Philip, right?
I worked with him. Our careers crossed a couple times. You know, he was one of the giants. He was a student of Jean Piaget, the French psychologist who first mapped how children learned, how the brain developed, when children were ready for certain ideas and when they weren't. And Piaget said that Papert was the only student who really understood the theory. And then Papert came, he was a South African, he came to he came to MIT and was very influential in helping Marvin Minsky develop the early ideas about AI. And he and Marvin started the MIT AI lab. By the time I was just a kid, basically a paid intern at Bolt, Brannick and Newman when Papert was there developing Logo. And he had this very idealistic idea that that this computer language, which was basically a baby version of Lisp with a lot of powerful tools, recursion, and that was the main thing. It was a recursive language, and everything was done recursively. And it would have been, and he had this idea that if you give kids Logo and they just play with it, they learn by playing, he compared it to how an art class, how kids play with clay and work it until they get something that they really like. And he says that's how mathematicians enjoy mathematics, but it's not at all like how math is taught in school.
Yeah.
Anyway, Logo was a great idea. He tried to push it in the schools. But BASIC, which was a pretty ugly language, full of problems, and that's the one that got taught. It was a very sad story to watch. It was kind of like, maybe I shouldn't say that. It was kind of like watching the PC take over the computer industry and the Mac.
Hi, I'm Mr. Maxie from Red.
I'm sorry, that was a little video. I was going to show some turtle graphics, which was...
Sure, do it.
Many people watching this probably had turtle graphics in their grade schools. You had a little turtle with a pen attached, and the idea was to... This is a on-screen turtle graphics, but the idea was... And if you look at this, you'll recognize... There you go. You'll recognize a kind of small-talky language, but app inventor from Google, which was later taken over by MIT and is a very easy way to program for Android, is also kind of the same drag and drop socketed language. This is Scratch we're looking at, and this is the Turtle graphics in Scratch. Scratch is essentially a small talk language. This was a whole movement that you're right. In many ways, it's sad, Philip, that we got sidetracked by went in the wrong direction here, and we're still paying the price a little bit for it. But many kids learned Logo in school. I don't think they teach it anymore, but it sure would be a good thing to bring back.
He was also a real gentle soul.
Yeah.
He got badly hurt in a traffic accident. I think he got hit by a truck or something. So he's been out of it for some time.
Well,
not quite the same story.
Yeah. Anyway, I hate to begin with obituaries, but there were, you know, there's some reasons to do that. There is still, I guess, if you want to get your kids into Turtle Graphics, there's turtleacademy.com where you can still learn programming using Logo and Turtle Graphics, and you don't have to be in school to do it. That's the one thing I have to say that is going well in this world is if you are, motivated, you can learn anything you want online, including languages that have long been deprecated because BASIC won. As long as we're talking, Philip, let's talk about Apple a little bit. Great article, I thought, by Sam Byford in The Verge, which many people have said for years is an Apple, pro-Apple blog. But in this case, in his First Click column, Sam says Apple should stop selling four-year-old computers. 1,514 days, 4 years, 1 month, and 24 days since Apple released the last MacBook Pro without a Retina display. It's been 2 years for a Mac Mini. If you go to Mac Rumors site where you can decide whether you should buy a Mac, it says do not buy on every single Mac except the MacBook because they're way overdue. The Retina MacBook Pro is 442 days old. The Mac Mini, 657 days old.
Yeah, this is a story that really hits computer writers where it hurts.
It's over, baby. Time to give up.
We're the ones who use these machines. And, you can hear people bitching on podcasts all over the internet. Apple, it's making its money on the iPhone. Most of it's two-thirds of its money. It's that's how Wall Street judges the company based on the iPhone. It is not in the business of doing what the computer writers want for their desktops. It has the money. What it lacks is the engineers. They just have a fairly, they don't have that many people who can make this stuff. So they're off making other things. I assume something will get updated this fall.
You're one of the people who thinks an iPad Pro really is the next computer. You don't need a MacBook.
No, I think I opened my MacBook Pro today after 10 days, mostly because I have to get on this podcast with you.
That's our fault. I'm going to make you use a computer whether you like it or not.
Well, there's still a lot of things you can't do with the iPad, which is like do podcasts and stuff like that. If I was doing this on my own, I would happily use that. But you're a
We make you use Skype, but you could easily.
Yeah, but like I use my iPad for pretty much everything. I write on it.
Yeah.
I edit my photos on it. It just is easier to use. I think people get really caught up in, it's like Apple controls everything on that iPad. But, I don't have to worry about viruses. I don't have to worry about it crashing on me all the time and any of those things. It just does a good job for me. And for me, that's fairly good. I do need a new computer. I would love to have a new MacBook Pro so I can edit my photos on Lightroom. But I too have a three-year-old MacBook Pro, and the thing starts levitating every time I open Photoshop or Lightroom. So I'm not really sure what to do about that. But I would say that, we have to just stop thinking about computers from the way they were in the past. And we have to think about them and what they can be in the future. I think that's the most important thing.
David, is it just nostalgia that makes people sad about losing computers?
Well, I wonder what it is that we need to do that we can't already do. I have Macintoshes. I have a very old Macintosh I use, and I had to really clean it up to get it going fast again. But there's not that much that I need to do that machine won't do. So not having a machine that is obsolescent every year or 2 years is a wonderful thing. What's Macintosh going to do that it doesn't do today? Yes, it could be faster. Yes, it could be this. Yes, you could put more memory in it. But the applications aren't driving it to need a whole lot more.
It's true for the first 30 years of the personal computer revolution, hardware was desperately trying to keep up with these massively bloated graphical operating systems. But it's caught up. And it's fast enough. It's been fast enough for years. So you make a good point. It's not like we have to have a new computer. Maybe we just want a new computer.
Well, and Apple probably wants to remove a few ports.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I don't know what this is going to be come in the fall. We're only about a month off from an Apple new iPhone announcement. And we're close enough now that the rumor mill coming out of the suppliers in China is probably pretty accurate. So I think it's safe to say that at least one of the new iPhones will not have the antiquated, obsolete, who needs it headphone port.
You'd think that this would not be a good quarter for Apple to make an iPhone that will turn people off with one of the big selling features. What are you looking for?
Your face stopped moving, but now that it's moving again, I feel much better. I just was worried.
Okay.
maybe you had a stroke or something and was talking somehow magically.
You could add an obit to the
Well, and then I had a look because neither David or Rome were moving much, obviously intent on what you're saying, but they were blinking at least. You were not. There was nothing going on.
I use the headphone jack on my iPhone almost every night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is obsolete.
No, there's been so much written about this, I hate to even open it up. But
here's Neil I. Patel's great article from a few weeks ago. Taking the headphone jack off phones is user hostile and stupid.
Can I just bring one point to this debate around the headphone jack.
Yes.
Remember how much you guys complained about
the floppy?
Floppies. And
yeah, yeah.
That's like what, the USB. That's like, I just, you know.
That's John Gruber's defense. He said, hey, Apple's good at this.
I think this is what they do is like they try and push the envelope a little bit. And, you know, in my opinion, it's just like it's their prerogative. So if you don't like it, you can always switch to, you know, Android or whatever else you is out there.
Well, that's my question. I wonder if this Apple will, for the first time ever, they're seeing drops in sales, see a significant drop in iPhone use because I think consumers want headphone ports.
Gruber's theory.
You're wearing headphones right now. You're wearing the white headphones that came with your iPhone.
I will wear the different ones when they come out. I mean,
they just, won't work, though, because they'll be lightning jack, and they won't work
by me. It's like, or I will use, like, the wireless headphones, which I can buy. Like, I mean, I think it just is, it's a wrong reasons to be, like, debating around, you know, Apple. I think there's a lot of other problems they have. I think.
I'm just piling on. This is just one more of many.
I like Gruber's theory is that there's something Apple is doing. No one can figure out why they're doing it this year. Why are they taking the jack off this year? And his theory is that there's something they're doing for this 10-year anniversary.
It is the 10th anniversary iPhone, isn't it?
Yeah. That's next year, not this one.
Oh.
And for some reason, that one doesn't want to have the usual jack. So they're warming people up for it. Or as he put it, they're gonna eat the burger with this phone and then clean up with the one afterwards.
Yeah, that's risky, though. This is your product at this point. You're not updating the computers. The iPad sales have tanked. Yeah. Your product watch is not going anywhere. Your product is an iPhone, and
it's a bold move. Maybe a really stupid move. It feels a little bit like a Johnny Ive design-driven thing rather than marketing.
How about this? Our friend Steve Gibson, who hosts Security Now, came up with a really interesting theory that if you're going to take away the iPhone, Apple on September 6th is going to have to say something. More than just, it makes it thinner or it gives us more room for a battery. It's going to have to give us some value in return for losing the iPhone jack. Steve says, because you're now connecting your headphones to the Lightning adapter, you can now do more with that headphone. For instance, what if Apple started selling noise-canceling headphones? What if all the earbuds that came with your iPhone did noise canceling, sophisticated noise canceling, because you've got a process, very sophisticated processor, and you've got a data port as well as a headphone port.
Not a bad theory.
That'd be value add. If they did that, they announced, look how much Bose gets for those quiet comfort headphones. If they announced that and they said, hey, this is part of it. And there's another thing, their headphones are going to be, or earphones are going to be the ultimate wearable, I think, because when you wear, we don't want to get rid of them. When you wear them, what this thing in your ear can do a lot more than just give you sound. It can measure your blood pressure, your oxygen level. Of course, it can measure your heart rate. The ear canal is a really good place for medical wearables. Might be another additional feature Apple could add.
Yeah, they're all going to cost more, though, and they're all going to need to be recharged overnight. I guess it depends on what Apple gives us in the way of.
But that's the point. You don't have to recharge them because you've got the Lightning port. The phone is the battery, right?
No, I'm thinking of the wireless ones. Really? Yeah.
I don't think wireless is where we're going. I interviewed David Hennemeyer Hansen, who's created Ruby on Rails, on Monday, and he said, oh, no, this is great. Who wears wired headphones? I want all those years back that I spent untangling my headphones. I don't know. Is the world ready? Is that where we're going? Wireless?
I have to assume that's what Apple is planning. I don't know if it happens this year, and I don't think they're going to give it away because those things are expensive.
Right. The cynic's answer is you can't license a mini jack. You sure as hell can license a Lightning port, and with that comes license revenues.
Anyway, let's hear more of what's wrong with Apple.
who wants to take a shot at Apple? Anybody?
There was some good stuff.
I'll give you something wrong with Apple. Here they go, replacing a perfectly good gun emoji with a squirt gun. But what the hell is wrong with these people?
Well, you know, I'm sure it comes out of political correctness or some version of that. But I love the little twist that because there is the squirt gun on the Apple apps, but in everybody else's app, it's a real gun. Someone had a neat graphic that showed them all at once. So you could say, come to our water party and bring your squirt gun. But in everybody else's app, it shows up as
a pistol. A 38. Police
very
special. this is Emojipedia, the folks who really great website that explains what emojis mean. And they actually raised a great issue. At first I thought, oh, that's great. Why should we have gun emojis? Have a toy gun emoji. That's good. But this is a communications medium. And when you say 2 p.m. tomorrow, local park, bring it. And you put a squirt gun on iOS 10. By the way, it's not going to be in iOS 9 right now. It's in iOS 10 coming. It may look like you have a different agenda when you see it on Android or Windows phone or Samsung phone. That's a good point.
What else?
Are we saying that Apple users will ultimately be outgunned?
They brought a squirt gun to a knife fight. No, that's right.
Come to the NRA picnic. Apple users, bring your squirt gun. I can see that, yeah.
You know what I love is the you wanted to talk about the Planet of the Apps, which sounds like
I do want to talk show. About this. Yes,
but that holds no appeal for me.
I don't like reality shows in general, but this is Apple's new TV
show.
Is
that they bought an exclusive on Carpool Karaoke, which I'd only heard about the day before because Michelle Obama was in it. Do you know this show?
Yeah, well, it's not. It wasn't a show. It was James Corden.
Yeah, it's
his late night show, and it's been wonderful. It's actually the only good thing on the show. I'm not a huge fan of the show, but he gets in the car driving, and famous people join him, and it's always fun.
So Apple has bought the exclusive rights, and they're going to put it on Apple Music.
What do you mean he's leaving? He's not going to do it anymore?
No, he's not going to host it anymore. They're looking for a host.
Well, that's terrible because the whole point of Carpool Karaoke is that he is a very accomplished singer and funny.
Yeah, he loves
those musicals.
Just
sharing what I read.
Yeah, I think they're spinning it out into a TV series, and Apple buys it. Now, that doesn't mean... That means if you want to watch it, you'll have to get it on iTunes, right?
Or if you want to watch it fresh, it may be some kind of windowing.
It's really been the single thing that James Corden's show, you know, this has been the great social media viral part of the show. That's the only reason I know about the show.
Yeah, he's almost hit a billion views on YouTube.
Here he is trying to talk his way into the White House.
Sound
in the wrong place. I'll back up if you give me my license.
Sir, do not back up.
Well, I'm
do not back up.
I'm in the wrong.
And when you put your car in drive, pull off to the right up there, please. And I'll give you further instructions once we get up there.
Oh my God! I should not do touristy things. I should not do touristy things.
He is quite funny, but then eventually, of course, the first lady gets in the car.
In the
beehive.
We
right
just
there.
Dropped the mic.
Didn't
we were making honey
we
there
were
in the
beehive.
See 2 million girls.
I want to see them singing. Let's see them singing here.
Grilled cheese sandwich. I can make. I'm gonna miss the people.
Yeah.
I mean, these are.
This
people.
Is now, by the way. This is, by the way, you got to give credit to Jerry Seinfeld for his. Breakthrough podcast, Comedians and Cars Getting Coffee. But even before that, you got to give credit to a good friend of the show, Bobby Llewellyn, who plays the robot, the rubber-faced robot on Red Dwarf, Crichton. Because Bobby used to do, in fact, I was even in Bobby's podcast. He'd go around the country in his electric car, pick up people and interview them in the car. And he discovered, and I think he was quite right, that there's something about people when they're driving in a car together, they're just more relaxed. And so Robert Llewellyn's was really the guy who invented this whole thing. He didn't sing, but he should get some credit for inventing this. But let's go back to the Planet of the Apps, which no one can argue is the best name for a television show ever.
Mm.
Oh, you're going to argue with me, huh?
Well, if you care about app developers, yeah.
Well, it's a reality show. And actually, that's my biggest problem with it, is this is going to completely misrepresent the thrill of being an app developer. The hosts, the judges of this will be Gwyneth Paltrow, because she has a child named Apple. Will.i.am, because he once was famous as a rap artist. And get this, Gary Vaynerchuk. Who is
he?
No, you don't know who Gary V is, but he is a podcaster. best known he for Wine Library TV, a good friend, known Gary ever since he started doing this. Gary was a wine seller who created a podcast about wine, but then turned it into a massive book deal and a huge business helping people do digital media.
He has a class on how to develop your personal brand. And how did we live without that?
And he's the king of it, let me tell you. So
that's why we had all immediately heard of him. Yeah, Gary who?
Nobody knows who he is. Isn't that funny? Yeah.
He's the clown who keeps showing up in my Facebook feed.
Yeah, that's who he is, yeah.
I do know him, and I think this is where I think I have a problem. You were asking me what is the problem with Apple, not the lightning port. This kind of stupidity of building a TV show around apps. It's like, what? Somebody needs to make friends in Hollywood, and so we should do
a show like this.
This is just such nonsense. They should be building better products and not stupid TV shows around those products. It's like, when is the, like, you know, if you want to do something for the shareholders, make interesting damn MacBooks which people can buy. You want to do something nice, make a better phone which people want to keep buying. Nobody cares if you do Planet of the Apps. This is coming from, you know, the so-called celebrity influx into the company, whether it is through the Beats acquisition or Eddie Q. I mean, you know, it's like you look at Eddie Q, the guy was hanging out at the playoffs when iCloud was burning for 6 hours. You know, he wouldn't have survived a day if Steve was around. I'm sorry, that's what gets me worked up about this company, is that they have all these wrong priorities. They want to do entertainment content, buy damn Netflix and move on from there. Right? Do it properly if you want to do it. Don't try and do this stupid penny ante stuff which adds no value to the company. Absolutely none. And I'm sorry, like, this is where I see this company going wrong.
I agree 100%. Preach.
I agree too. And to me, it feels a little bit like Jimmy Iovine.
Well, it's Eddie Q, Jimmy Iovine. It's the Hollywood connection. And I think, you know, Apple would say, well, but it's part of a strategic plan for us to make Apple TV more valuable. Clearly, Apple sees its future in services, right? Because they're starting to make money there as the hardware declines, frankly, the services is starting to become a multi-billion-dollar business. So what they see themselves as, I would guess, I'm just kind of looking at them, is some sort of content/services company.
I don't think so.
That's a different story. I think that's a different angle. Planet of the Apps. How about building a search engine which works more effectively?
I agree.
How about building an editorial
fix
team?
iTunes.
Exactly. I just think just focusing on all these wrong things is the problem. I think that's the bigger issue with the company than anything else. You need better computing intelligence to make a better shopping experience for people on the App Store, not Planet of the Apps. I don't care. Like, do I give a about Gwyneth Paltrow and her taste? I don't, right? Like, that's an old way of thinking about this, you know, about how people discover things and how people do things. I think this company just desperately needs a fresh, you know, fresh infusion of thinking. There just is really old school way of thinking, you know, whether I'm not a big fan of this whole Jimmy Iovine kind of thinking that we will do this hand-coded playlist and we'll do this, which is all going to be done by hand and artists. All those things are nice, but in the end, they just need to build systems of tomorrow, not, you know, the keep doing things of today. Like, I really think this is a big challenge for the company. And nobody seems to kind of, you know, call them out on it anymore.
I couldn't agree more. I want to take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about the challenge that not just Apple, but all tech companies face of a stagnation of the business cycle, which is seems to be accelerated. What does Apple do? How does Apple stay relevant? How do they find new markets? Everybody's dealing with this. Google's doing it. Microsoft has reinvented itself. I think this is a fascinating subject. We got a great panel to do it. David Corsi is here from nowhere. He's just Corsi.com. He has nothing
I'm
to plug,
nowhere.
Nothing
no
to sell. He's just nowheresville. He's in Tracy. That's where he is. But we love him, and he brings a unique perspective to the party. Absolutely, as does Om Malik, Giga Om's founder, and now at Om.co and P.co. See, if I see P.co, that's not right. Pi.co?
It's called Pico.
Yeah, I know, but you got to put a dot in there, man.
Yeah,
it's not Om.co. Is it Om.co?
Om.co.
Om.co. P.co. Pi.co. Okay, we'll do that.
Pi.co.
Pi.co. But it's pronounced Pico. You see the Pico. Problem. You see the problem here.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. He owns the Co registry, apparently. It's all from now on, all Co all the way down. And Philip Elmer DeWitt, who has left the trades. He's no longer an ink-stained wretch. He's now part of the digital world at PED30.com, his new Apple 3.0 site. It's great to have all three of you. We will continue the conversation in a moment, but first a word from our sponsor, Wealthfront. You all face this issue. We all do. You got to save for long-term savings for the retirement, for the kids' college fund, for that house down payment. You got to be saving money. But what are you going to do with it? How are you going to save? Are you going to throw it in a mattress? No. You're going to put it in a bank savings account? Come on, really? Get real. You need growth. How are you going to do it? Well, a lot of people invest, you know. There's a lot of growth there, but there's also a lot of work there. You got to pay attention to your investment. Also, maybe you hire a broker. They cost between 1% and 3% of what they manage every single year, not to mention secret hidden transaction fees. And half the time they're making money on the side because they're selling you something there and, you know, they're getting a commission for. And that's not it. Let me tell you, computers have changed everything. And I know that the brokerages are scared of Wealthfront because I see articles all the time. Wealthfront doesn't charge you 1, 2, or 3% of the money under management. They charge 0.25% a year, 25 basis points, less than anybody, zero commissions, no hidden fees. And that's because computers. The computer's doing all the work for you. And a computer has another advantage. It can constantly monitor your investment, rebalance your portfolio, do sophisticated things like tax loss harvesting, all on your behalf at a very low cost. Now, of course, computer programs got to be well written. Well, look at the people who are behind this, some of the smartest people. They went out and they got an advisory board of people like Burton Malkiel, who wrote kind of the book, The Random Walk on Down Wall Street. Charles D. Ellis wrote another classic. They've got between them 200 years of combined investment experience, 7 PhDs, Nobel Prize winning academic research, the best investment practices, and it does a great job. And that's really what matters. I tell you what, if you want to find out more, you don't have to invest right away. They've got some free services you can try at wealthfront.com/twit. Answer a few simple questions about your time frame, your risk aversion, and they will generate a sample portfolio. That's yours to keep. You can also take your current portfolio and your current investments, put them in there, and they'll give you some idea of, you know, how well diversified it is, how much risk it is, what you're losing to fees, how you can minimize your taxes on your current stuff. Wealthfront.com. They just introduced their 529 college savings plan, too, which is really great. It's like a Roth IRA for higher education expenses for your kids or your grandkids. Wealthfront's growing fast, more than $3 billion in client assets under management. Many of you Twit fans have been trying it, and I get emails all the time from people who love it. Go there right now. Find out more. The minimum investment is just $500, so it's easy to dip your toe in. But listen to this. If you do decide to invest with Wealthfront, your first $15,000 will be managed not for 1, 2, or 3% a year, not even for 0.25% a year, but for nothing free forever, for life. Great way to start your nest egg. Wealthfront.com/twit. It is really a great solution. We're talking about Apple right now. We'll move on and talk about some other topics. But really, this is a topic that all of the mature tech companies are facing today, is how do you continue to innovate? You know, it's the innovator's dilemma. We've known about it for years. Isn't that all Apple's trying to do, is find the next big thing? And shouldn't they be praised for going beyond thinking, well, it's just the next computer or the next phone or the next iPad or the next doohickey? Maybe our future is in services. Isn't that what Microsoft decided?
Funny enough that I'm writing a piece about this for the New Yorker. Hopefully tomorrow or day after it'll go out. But what I'm talking about is essentially, if you look at the top five companies by market cap right now, they are Apple, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and Facebook. That's like five largest companies by market cap. So what stock market is saying, that they believe in the potential of these companies, they believe in the growth these companies will have. Actually, despite their mega sizes, with the exception of Apple, which is having a down year, you see the other, like Google, Amazon, and Facebook are having high double-digit growth in their most recent quarter, both in revenue terms and you know, from a profit standpoint too. So there is much less of an issue around these companies. The reason I was actually talking about Apple trying to, you know, need to focus more on using data and being smart about where their opportunities are instead of doing things like Planet of the Apps is from that standpoint. I think these companies have mega platforms, like Apple also has, you know, like Apple has services business, which is growing really, really fast. You know, it's almost $6 billion a quarter business now. So they have a lot of opportunities to capture, but they need to be focused on where they're going to capture those opportunities. Google, you think people will not search less? They'll search less next year or the year after, or they'll look for less information next year? Probably not. Will people be less social next year? Probably not. So, you know, Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, none of these companies get less valuable. I think their big growth curve is actually in front of them as long as they are focused. And I think this is why companies like Apple need to get more focused. Microsoft has decided to focus on cloud and cloud-related services, and you're going to start to see them transition their old enterprise-y businesses onto Azure and make money off it. They're taking productivity and turning it into, like, how does the world work in the future? So they have clearly figured out what's the way forward. Like, it may take them some time to get there, but they're moving in the right direction. So you start to see these big five companies have a lot of growth ahead of them, as long as they're not distracted by penny ante stuff. That's my analysis of the situation.
I think I would disagree in one respect. There is a significant difference between Microsoft and Apple, and Google, Facebook, and is Amazon the other member of the five horsemen of the apocalypse? Is that Apple has and Microsoft have significant strong competition. You could argue that Android is actually stronger than iPhone. I think it's pretty clear Facebook has no competition. Google has very little. I mean, Bing, very little competition. Amazon just ate the competition. So that's a significant difference. Apple's in a tougher, much tougher position, aren't they? I mean, you don't have to buy a computer, a phone, or a tablet from Apple. There are plenty of good alternatives.
But once you
and their services suck.
And yet they got 15 million people paying for Apple Music.
How much longer? That's the question.
You never know. You don't know. Like in a year, they have 15 million people. It took Spotify 5 years to get to 35 million. Just think about that. Like, so they have.
Well, but the music landscape is different too. And this may be why Apple is sucking up to Hollywood. Spotify only survives because the music industry allows it to. And Spotify's only revenue stream is from subscriptions. Apple can afford to lose money on Apple Music. It's not their main business.
And they get a piece of the cut from Spotify too, right? Because every time...
Spotify doesn't like that much.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is a lot more opportunity for Apple if this company decided it needed to zero in on services more effectively. Apple Pay is a great business. I think it's going to do really well. I think you have to stop thinking of Apple just from a hardware perspective, but you have to think of them from a services perspective. I mean, if I was them, I am seriously thinking about maybe we should buy Netflix, right? Like that adds a big services component to their business. It's a big acquisition, but they have the stock and the money to make this happen. Like, and they have, like, it also fits into their bigger agenda of like having an iTunes like another entity which can create a lot of revenue for them. So I think the most important thing is they need to be kind of looking at how do you make acquisitions which are like, you know, more than $300 million. How do they figure out what are the new things people will keep buying from them and what are the new services? And if they can't build those services, how do you bring those services in-house by buying other people like Netflix? I think they need to build up their, you know, big data and internet chops, which they don't, so that, you know, iCloud doesn't keel over every so often. So they have to do all those things. You know what they don't want to do? The planet of the apps.
the can I weigh in here?
Please, Philip. This is your beat.
There's a lot that I have a lot to say about what
Omar would you short said. Apple if you were an investor right now?
No. Well, you know, it's gone up 10% in the last 2 weeks. There were analysts telling their clients to sell Apple 2 weeks ago, and they've got a lot of mud on their face right now. The services, I think, is a bit of a distraction. Apple, in my opinion, will remain a hardware company primarily, and services is in support of the hardware. It's part of the walled garden that keeps people in, and they have to be competitive in services, but they don't have to make money at it, and they don't actually have to be the best. I think Apple is looking at what I believe they're making a car. I know Jason Calcanis last week floated the rumor that Apple is not building a car. They're just going to go and make the software. That felt like disinformation to me. If you think of Apple as the company that made a lot of money on computers and phones and is working on a car that will probably do what the others did, which is skim off the most profitable part of the of every market it enters, and you know, have a great business, a great profitable business, as opposed to say Android. Nobody makes money making Android machines, and
Samsung does. Samsung had a great quarter.
But then they'll have, because they come out with that phone in the quarter when Apple doesn't have a new phone, and then Apple leapfrogs. It's happened so many years in a row, you can kind of count on it. Then looking at the other companies, I think what Google, people may continue to search Google, but I think Google has a structural problem in that most of its revenue comes from the US and Europe. And most of the growth of the internet is in Asia and Africa and places that people don't spend a lot of money.
Google does have competition in China. There's serious competition from Baidu.
Well, they don't even really exist in China.
Yeah.
Right now, you can look at Google as it's funding the growth of the internet from the revenue that it's getting from its richest customers. But the growth that it's funding is in places where revenue doesn't grow. If you step back far enough, you can start seeing sort of clouds on Google's horizon. Amazon is an amazing machine, but it's, you know, from a stock market perspective, it's way overpriced. And if it doesn't deliver the growth that it's promised, there are going to be a lot of sad investors. Who else do we have? There's Facebook.
Facebook's strong. You got to love Facebook, right?
Well, but it's Facebook is has a lot of the elements of a fad. And people are very fickle in social media. And
doesn't Facebook feel like it's making the right moves though to kind of transcend that? Who's going to come along? When you have 1.5 billion customers, there's no MySpace coming along to steal that.
Well, I don't know what's going on in China, but I wouldn't be surprised if the next big social media doesn't come from the U.S.
But I don't see I don't see Americans using it.
We'll see. I don't know.
WeChat here. Everybody uses WeChat in China, but nobody's using it here.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
There's this natural network effect with these kinds of things, right?
Yeah. But there's also a little bit of a hula hoop effect. And so we'll see.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Philip Elmanowitz says Facebook, it's just a fad. It's just a fad, kids.
Well, it's also making a ton of money on advertising
on mobile. It's shown that it can handle mobile, right?
I'm a little wary of the advertising model as the way to fund the internet.
Interesting.
We've talked about this before. My eyes have been trained not to look at ads on the screen.
Well, that's right. Banner ads are not the future. I agree. Yeah, but there's other kinds of advertising.
Look at Instagram.
Look at Instagram, a Facebook company, and you scroll through the great pictures from Om Malik and Chris Michael and all, so many great pictures, and then every 10th image is an ad that you're not really sure it's an ad right away. And I have literally bought stuff in Instagram ads because I went, oh, I like that. I think that's a very effective platform, much more so than a banner ad. Go ahead, Om.
I think I disagree with Philip. I think Facebook is going to be less of a, it's going to be a growth engine for a long time. They're just beginning to start to monetize Messenger. I think payments are a big part of their future. Commerce is a big part of their future. I mean, they have a lot of opportunity going forward. And to think of them as a fad is wrong, in my opinion. I think you're underselling Mark Zuckerberg, who is perhaps the single best CEO in tech right now.
That's what you look at, to me, is you look at a Jeff Bezos or a Mark Zuckerberg, and you place a bet on them versus, say, a Tim Cook, to be honest.
And you look at Google. Google has so many data streams, and they have the compute power and the brain power to mash up all those data streams and build the future of home, build the future of connected car, build the future of advertising, build the future of information retrieval, all those things. They're a pretty fairly uniquely positioned company. They still need to figure out what are the revenue streams of the future, but From a technology standpoint, they have a lot of things going for them. I think same goes for Amazon. Amazon is the infrastructure of modern society. Whether you look at their cloud services or their e-commerce services, they are sucking the middle, retail dry by their operations. So, Microsoft, may not be in the best of conditions right now, but they're on the right track. I think the Apple, too. I am mixed on Apple for one simple reason, that they're starting to do a lot of foolish things, but as a platform, they are very strong. As a brand, they're very strong. They still make more money for app developers than Android does, and they make, a lot of great products. And I think if in all reality, they too have a future, if they can do services right, they can bring in resources into the company which can skew them into forward-thinking areas, which involves software and data and internet, infrastructure capabilities. So I don't think these five actually have a lot going for them. Who else do you see out there? You think Oracle is going to be the driver of the future, or IBM, right, or, ExxonMobil, or Monsanto? I don't think so. Like, you have companies like the five big tech companies. More importantly, they have scale. They build their own hardware. They can hire whoever they want. They can. They have so much cash that they actually skew the salary situation in Silicon Valley to their own advantage. I mean, they have a lot going for them. The big five are the big five, and they're going to get bigger and bigger, at least for near foreseeable future. I mean, you know, I'm not talking from a stock standpoint. I'm just talking from, you know, who is their competition? We talk about, you know, big data and artificial intelligence and forget how much of that depends on compute power. How much of that depends on ability to get multiple data streams from multiple different sources to make sense of, right? So I think there is a lot which these companies can do, which other people, their competitors, can't do. You're starting to see, like, you know, some of the middle-level networking companies can't find scale anymore because people like Facebook decide they want to build their own switches and then open source them. And so now, you know, Taiwanese can make those switches, and so software is open source. So there is a big change which is happening in the way things are. So I would actually look at these five and just say, like, wow, there is something bigger going on here.
Would you add a sixth if you had a Tesla Solar City, maybe Tesla Solar City SpaceX?
I don't know how SpaceX comes into play, but Tesla and SolarCity definitely have the potential of becoming a bigger, you know, the new energy platform.
And right? And again, this is somebody, Elon Musk, who, like a Jeff Bezos or a Mark Zuckerberg, has a broader, longer-term vision and a seemingly a plan. David, you're silent on all this. You got a theory, an opinion?
He doesn't have a mic. That's why he's not talking.
Oh.
No, I have a mic. I'm here.
Oh,
I'm
good. Here okay.
Well, I listening to Om, I have to say I'm violently in agreement, but we need to – the industry that we grew up in, you know, we're here as technology people, and now we're talking about Apple's retail strategy and Apple's automotive strategy.
Yeah.
And at some point I wonder, what do we really know about this? You know, who are we? You know, we're
That's
not.
Never
the
stopped
audience.
Us before, David. Now, come
I
on.
I understand, but if Apple is getting into the celebrity thing, I have to remind them that Marissa Mayer did so well with that at Yahoo, which means she's going to end up at Apple next. That would make good sense.
Talking about Katie Couric and.
And even.
But
some,
she was continuing Terry Semel, her predecessor, was a Hollywood guy. So she was just kind of following along in his footsteps.
Well, okay, and $7 million parties and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that the world has changed. The audience has changed. The audience is now everyone.
Well, I agree, and we're talking about really massive companies now all of a sudden.
Yes, indeed. And Apple doesn't have to be just a hardware company. Hardware is probably not enough to keep Apple going in the future. It's going to be different sorts of businesses than what we've grown up with. We have the benefit of knowing, you know, what's happened up until this date, but it's not clear to me that we know exactly what's going to happen in the future or that anybody does, except that it's going to be very broad-based. It's going to be at, you know, whatever you call the general public or whatever the audience is going to be, it's going to not be, you know, three and a half or what, three white guys in Ohm sitting around talking about, you know, what's going to happen with
Ohm, are you a half?
At three and a half is good.
I think you make an excellent point, David, that where once we could talk about PCs and speeds and feeds and gigahertz versus megahertz, now we're covering a much broader field that is ventured into the non-tech area. It's got its mass appeal now. It's mass market.
Well, there's lots of science that shows up on what used to be tech blogs.
Right.
You know, volcanoes and space flight. And you're thinking, gee, we must have run out of stuff to talk about technology.
You're not going to hear about volcanoes on this show, I can tell you right now. A little hot air, maybe, but no lava.
That is pretty good. But let's talk about Apple, right? The things Apple does, which nobody else does really well. They still make world's best mobile chips, right? Like, and because they have so much money that they can hire people, engineers, semiconductor engineers, to build new kind of silicon to not only make their phones slimmer and slimmer, but also do some crazy things, right? Similarly, they hire some of the best material science people to build new kind of alloys for their phones and for their, you know, watches and computers. So they do so much deep tech, which we don't see and nobody talks about. Same is with Google and Facebook and Microsoft.
George Gilder pointed this out decades ago with Microcosm, that the economies of scale really start kicking in the chip business and so forth. But so innovation's happening, but it takes leadership to know which directions to innovate in. It's not enough merely to buy PA Risk and hire 1,000 chip designers. You have to then point them in the right direction.
I mean, and I just think that is not going to go away from the Apple core, because that's the thing which makes them great, and that's what they will keep focusing on. Like, again, I keep harking back on these ideas of, like, not doing core stuff, which is, like, core stuff is doing, you know, better chips and better materials and better phones and generating more demand with great ads and not through...
It's a leadership issue, though, right? Yeah.
No, I think Tim Cook is fine. I think he's a fine, fine CEO, but he needs more people who understand internet around him. I think there is a lack of, you know, internet understanding in that company. There is a lot of DNA in hardware. They need more software, you know, software from an internet perspective, not software from a desktop or an OS perspective. They have ample capabilities in that. What they don't have is the ability to think about, like, you know, the internet and big data and intelligence in a smart, modern way. I think that's what they need to be focused on.
Let's talk about that, because that's been the when it was clear that Google was sort of doubling down on AI, and Microsoft and Amazon both talked up their AI efforts, and they, you know, clearly have a lot of strength in terms of the massive amounts of data they're collecting and the kind of control they have over extracting stuff from it. It put pressure on Apple to step up. I don't know what to think about Tim Cook saying, you know, we've been doing advanced AI for years. Yeah, maybe. I mean, Siri clearly needs AI to work.
Siri is their example of advanced AI. They got a long way to go.
Yeah,
It's a laggard in that area.
Yeah. Hey, Siri. Hey, Siri.
Hey, Siri. Hey, you, Siri.
You know, now they've just this week they've bought reportedly spent $200 million buying Turi. Yeah. What was funny about that for me is I went to try to find out what Turi is about, and I watched some. Video. They give conferences every year, so you can find out exactly what they're about. And the last conference that this guy, what's his name, Carlos Guestrin, gave, he had a graphic that showed all the ways that machine intelligence, machine learning, is affecting all these companies, and it had basically everybody in Silicon Valley but Apple. And then Apple is the one that buys them. So you know,
by the way, they bought them at a premium price, right? It's widely agreed that $200 million is a premium.
Is that widely agreed?
Yeah.
I don't know.
A lot of people said big payday for Turi, I think, was that.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, when you get bought by Apple. Yeah. I see them as a hardware company. I think Ohm is right. They have a weak spot because knowing how to map the internet and take advantage of it and be a player there doesn't seem to be in their DNA. It wasn't in Jobs's, it's not where the smartest people and the best engineers at Apple go. It's not how they get rewarded. Their interests don't align with being great at that. I think because they're a hardware company.
Let's take a break. I have more. We have much more to talk about. We've got Philip Elmer DeWitt. Apple 3.0 is his new blog at ped30.com. 30, I should say zero. 30. Put a slash through that O. .com. And also Om Malik from pi.co and om.co. And David Corsi from corsi.com. Tech Insider on the Twitter. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks, the super easy cloud accounting software that changed my life. 2004, I was still a freelancer, and I had to bill a Canadian company every month, not only bill them for my time, but also expenses in Canadian dollars, and I was just painful firing up Excel and Word and making an invoice and sending it out, and sometimes I'd just forget, or I put it off. Problem with being a freelancer, you don't make the invoice, you don't send the invoice, you don't get paid. I was complaining about this and how hard it was to Amber MacArthur, my co-host in Canada. She said, oh, there's this new company just starting in Toronto. You're going to love them. FreshBooks. Man, that changed my life. FreshBooks makes it easy not only to send out invoices. It basically takes the paperwork out of being a small business owner. And after all, I think unless your small business is a CPA accounting firm, this is not why you got into business. Using FreshBooks to create and send an invoice literally takes about 30 seconds. There's no formula, no formatting. They handle all the currencies. Just perfectly crafted invoices every time. You can, of course, put your brand on your invoices, set recurring invoices. It's easy to get receipts in the invoices. You just use the FreshBooks app and take pictures, so it's very easy to get paid back for expenses. And, of course, your clients can pay you online, which means you get paid a lot faster. With FreshBooks, you can also set up auto payment reminders. So that, in fact, you can even, if you got a cooperative client, it can all be automated. You bill, they pay automatically. There's a super handy deposit feature. You can invoice for payments up front while you're kicking off a project. You can also import expenses automatically. I mean, this is all about getting the job done faster, spending less time on the boring stuff, doing more of what you love, your business, your work. FreshBooks can even show you whether or not a client has even, like, looked at the invoice. So if they say, oh, I didn't get the invoice, and you say, well, you opened it and read it on October 3rd. Where's my money? They even have an EMV chip card-enabled card reader. So if you work in people's houses, you can use FreshBooks the whole process. Give them an estimate on the phone or tablet. Give them an invoice on the phone or tablet, and they pay on your phone or tablet using the chip card reader. I can go on and on. Why don't you just go there and try it? FreshBooks.com/twit. The only thing I would ask, if when they ask you, how'd you hear about it? Just put This Week in Tech in the how did you hear about it section, because they like to know how you got in the door there. Start your 30-day free trial right now. It's the number one cloud accounting solution for small business owners. FreshBooks. They saved my life. They could save yours. FreshBooks.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support for This Week in Tech. You compared Apple to Yahoo. I don't know. It's not that bad, is it, David? So, yeah. Oh, he's muted again. Is that us or is that you?
It's not me.
Oh, now we hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was not me.
No, we must have muted you.
Well, I think it's when you go off into this entertainment business that really isn't what you know how to do.
Yeah.
You end up, I mean, Yahoo hired a bunch of name brand content for a platform that had no place for name brand content. No way to promote it. So they threw it into Yahoo and it just disappeared.
And now it's a Verizon company.
And now it's a Verizon company with its, you know, its sister company, AOL. It's like Valley of the Dead.
You do wonder what Verizon's thinking.
Planet of the Apps? How creative was that? I mean, did it take them more than a second to think of this? And Gwyneth Paltrow? Now, she and Marissa Mayer should be like, you know, co-hosts together.
That would be good. I'd watch that.
Oh, yeah. It would be a huge success.
So Marissa says she's going to stay at Yahoo. I have to wonder because, according to Fortune, your old site, Philip, the real number for Marissa Meyer's Golden Parachute is $122,578,795. Based on stock, $42 million worth of stock and other shares, restricted shares and new grants and salary. And geez, Louise. Why would she stick around if she could take $123 million out the door? She did all right, even if the shareholders didn't, says Fortune magazine. Oh, well, it's, you know, it's sad. We love, Yahoo has a great and a wonderful history in the internet, but times change. Things move on. Speaking of which, Jet.com is moving on. This is yet another fantastic exit for the founder of Jet.com, who, by the way, is probably going to have to stick around for a few years. Mark Lohr, you may remember, founded Diapers.com in 2005. And Amazon, you know, undercut them, practically put them out of business, then bought the company. Mark Lohr had a decent payday, went on, and he's now founded Jet.com. And according to the Wall Street Journal, Walmart's about to buy him for $3 billion. If anybody could challenge Jeff Bezos and Amazon, it's got to be Walmart. Yes? Who wants to take this one? Nobody.
it's all yours, Leo.
You got to admire Mark, yeah. Though. I mean, he's come up with a brilliant strategy, which is create an Amazon competitor, let Amazon practically put you out of business, because I don't think Jet.com was going anywhere, let's be honest. And then
I don't even know what they did. What did they do?
They were, there you go. Perfect example. They were an Amazon competitor.
Hmm. Well, that story says they're picking up 350,000 customers a month. So if that's the case,
I
it really
find
is
that hard to believe.
Well, it's buy them and kill them. I mean, just that they are subsumed, assimilated into the greater Amazon.
Yeah.
Being washed downstream, never to be seen again.
I tried Jet.com. You had to join, I think. You had to pay, kind of like Prime, I guess. And then it wasn't, you know, you've seen the ads maybe, obviously you haven't, Philip, where they had the price shrinking gun. See, this was a terrible story. The whole thing just was. And the problem is Amazon, this is what I'm saying, has no competition. Maybe your local grocery store, but with, you know, maybe Walmart, right? Because Walmart doesn't need to build more fulfillment centers. They've got Walmarts everywhere and warehouses everywhere. They could even offer same day delivery in many areas. So I'm not, you know, and $3 billion to a company that has hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue every year is probably a small amount of money.
I have a hard time not seeing Amazon as kind of a malevolent force. It's kind of hollowed out a lot of downtown areas.
There's no bookstores left, that's for sure.
And that was just the first, you know, one industry after another, they've kind of gobbled up, and it turns out where they're making their money is in the big data centers they've built. It's almost
S3 and Amazon Web Services. Yeah,
yeah. Well,
it was really Walmart that cleared out small town downtowns before there ever was an Amazon.
True.
So Walmart has cleared that out. They've also cleared out a whole bunch of jobs. Amazon showed up and cleared out the bookstores. And between them now, they're clearing out shopping malls,
everything
retail,
left, strip mall,
everything that does not require a human to help you is going to be in deep trouble.
Amazon is hyper-competitive. I mean, obviously, with their book deals, with the publishers, they've really ground the publishers into dust. Now they're leasing 40 cargo jets, Amazon Prime Air. And I have to imagine that some of this is to continue to get prices from UPS and FedEx to drop. Amazon, there's a great book about Amazon, which I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was
The Everything Store.
The Everything Store. Fabulous book. And they talk about this. When UPS said, we're going to raise the rates, Jeff Bezos said, really? And
can I just make one comment about Amazon?
Yeah.
You guys were talking about them making all their money from their data center cloud services. Actually, that's not true. Their non-AWS businesses, which is non-Amazon Web Services, revenues in the last quarter grew 29%, which was up 26% a quarter before.
Wow.
And it was up 19% in Q4 of 2015.
And Prime Day, that was the best day ever, right? So they had their best day ever.
That's the revenue. That's how about the revenue. The profit?
But Jeff has a dial in his office that says profit. Let's turn it up. Let's turn it down. No.
Let me just stop you right there. Last, their non-AWS EBITDA was $1.2 billion in the most recent quarter versus $684 million a year ago.
But that's Bezos' decision. They decide whether to reinvest or not.
They invest in new things.
Right.
They are smart about investing in new things.
I don't want them to make money. That's why.
I don't understand like what we are talking about here. This is a company with almost $30 billion in revenue, which grew 31%. I mean, in this last 3 months, for God's sake. You know, their third party, which is got nothing to do with what they are selling. This is people selling on the Amazon platform.
Using their fulfillment, in effect. Yeah.
That business was up almost 40%. Okay? So there is...
But doesn't that scare you?
I'm just saying we keep talking about AWS and how much AWS is making money for them. Actually, that's just is a myth. They actually make a lot of revenues from their non-AWS businesses, and they actually have a lot of profit margin in there. They choose to spend their profits on new opportunities.
On jets. Yeah. Well, AWS, I guess the interesting thing about AWS is it came out of nowhere. It was just, we got all these computers. We should probably do something with them. And they built the strongest cloud service platform, besting everybody, including Oracle, Microsoft, and Google.
They're taking market in that sector. They're sucking up the dollars from the Oracles, from the HPs, from the mid-tier companies, not from, you know, this is a new way of doing things. I mean, like we can, you know, you can choose to like them or dislike them, but what they are doing is building out a really interesting business, which is very strong. It's like, their logistics, they are a logistics company. They do logistics for data and, you know, bits, and they do, you know, logistics for atoms. That's what they do. They are essentially a logistics company, and they are spending a ton of money on making those logistics be better. They have fulfillment centers. They have their own Air Force.
4767s. They're leased, but that's the smart way to do it, of course, not to buy it.
The whole, you know, you and I talked about them as a company a long time ago. And, you know, I obsess about Amazon, not from a commerce standpoint, but like as a macro, company standpoint.
Well, I like it that they're a logistics company. That kind of makes sense.
Right. So if you really think about it, what they are doing, and I wrote about this on Pico in a conversation with one of my people I interviewed, Liam Casey. I think we all like to think of the commerce and retail in the old terms, in which goods come, they sit on the dry docks, they go to warehouses, they sit in warehouses, then they go to distribution centers, and from there they go into the corner stores. What Amazon is doing is building an end-to-end, always moving supply chain. So you're squeezing out every single inefficiency out of the logistics chain and then making that work for you from a profit standpoint. So when, you know, guys at Walmart and Jet.com talk about merging, that's an interesting idea. That's an interesting Band-Aid. But what they have to do is think about how these guys are thinking. End-to-end, same-day delivery, so that you don't even have to think about going to your neighborhood retail store. Like, And that is only possible when the goods are constantly moving in the supply chain. And how do you do that? By building the most awesome kick-ass logistics chain in the world. And that's what these guys are trying to do. I mean, you know, in like the audacity of Amazon is what I am most impressed by. You know, am I scared by them? Of course, I'm scared of every big company controlling every part of our life. I don't even for one second think twice about like Amazon as a giant monster which is going to gobble up everything. They will.
So that's it. It's over.
I mean, you know,
so we agree.
It's scary, I mean, only in the sense that there's once there's no competition, Amazon just, you know, eats the world. Right? I mean, who needs the corner store anymore? And by the way, I'm all in on Amazon. I buy everything from Amazon. I just bought a giant TV, and, you know, that doesn't make any sense to ship that across the country, but I bought it on Amazon instead of going down to the local electronics store. By the way, I don't even think there is a Best Buy in town anymore. So, is that good? That's not good for consumers, but, well, maybe it is. I don't know. I'm happy.
I mean, I'm just saying that they will eventually make money and they will make money.
They make as much money as they want to make is what they're doing right now.
So it's just a different place for them to be.
Yeah. And now they have an air fleet.
Do we think they're really going to deliver by drones?
No.
I know they're trying it out in England. They've got the green light.
You know where it's interesting? The drone, there is value in drone delivery, not in the first world, but for instance, when Haiti had that terrible earthquake and they couldn't get, there were lots of places that you couldn't get medicines into and other important commodities. Drone delivery was the only way. You couldn't get a truck over the roads. They were able to do that. And I suspect that's really more the future of drone delivery than just bringing it down my street here and dropping it on my doorstep. Why do that even?
So and so why promote it? Why did they unveil the drone?
He was on 60 Minutes and he had to have something interesting to say.
I think, you know, the big thing about tech companies and their stock market valuation is you have to promise people,
right,
or show people what's coming next.
You don't get a price to earning ratio of 3,500 by not showing something cool once in a while.
I mean, you know, why is Facebook talking about Oculus all the time?
Right.
That thing isn't putting anything into their bottom line for a very long time.
If ever.
Right. So it's all like, or, you know, Google doing things with, like, you know, diabetes-related contact lenses and, you know, connected car. All those things are in the future. The reason they are doing this is because what else would you do with your money? Give it back to the shareholders like Apple is doing? That makes no sense.
Well, Apple's keeping most of it in Ireland, really.
Also, they're giving a lot. They're doing these share buybacks.
The buybacks are good, yeah. But that gives them more control of their destiny, doesn't it? Isn't that the point?
I think that is a nice way of saying it. The other company which did a lot of buybacks, IBM. Look where they are.
Yeah.
But buybacks are not necessarily a good thing. I think part of it is that they pay their employees in stock and they have to the buybacks are enable is allowing the P/E ratio to at least stay even in this downturn.
By the way, Amazon's P/E ratio, which was 3,500 when they did that 60 Minutes interview, is down to a mere 190. So I don't know what that means.
He turned the dial.
The knob. I swear to God, he's got a knob. How much profit should we have this quarter, Jeff? I don't know. Let's set it to 10%. Right there.
And this is not a cranky geek version of the show. You guys are not cranking out at all. David is quiet.
David, get cranky.
I don't know. Ohm's been pretty cranky.
I feel like I'm the only one playing by the.
No, I'm Mr. Affable. They told me I have to be affable.
What's wrong with you, Leo? I'm not going to come on the show next time.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I got to get cranky.
I am bearing the brunt of crankiness right now.
I'll think of something to be upset about.
Let's talk about the Olympics for just a second.
Oh, that'll get us cranky. Hold on. We'll get Comcast. There we can get really cranky.
I can get cranky.
We can get cranky.
This up, waiting for
save your crank. We will have a
what
cranky
do you
moment.
Mean by that? Save my crank.
Save up all the crank. Show? No, it is not.
Yeah, I was going to say the feds are coming through the door.
Save your crankiness, and we will be back with more in just a moment. Great panel. I know I build them as cranky. They're too nice. Philip Elmer DeWitt, Om Malik, he's the only cranky one in the bunch. And David Corsi, whose crankiness is yet to come. And I might, if you mention the word Comcast, I might get cranky too.
Comcast.
Slowly I turned, inch by inch, step by step. Our show is brought to you by Stamps.com. I'll tell you, this is something that makes me happy. You know what makes me cranky? Going to the post office. That's a cranky thing. To get postage, that's crazy, too. Why do that when you could do everything you do at the post office? Buy and print U.S. postage, packages, get them ready to go, fill out all the forms right at your desk with Stamps.com. And then a uniformed member of the United States government, a.k.a. your postal man, postal carrier, will come and pick it up for you. Love Stamps.com. How great would it be if your post office didn't have any lines, didn't have any parking, was open 24/7. You get all your mailing and shipping done whenever you wanted. If you sell on Amazon or eBay or Etsy or anywhere, you need Stamps.com. If you mail out bills or brochures, if you do any mailing, you need Stamps.com. You don't have to buy stamps. You just print them. And they'll even send you a digital scale so you know exactly how much to print. No more overpaying or underpaying on your postage. You'll also get, if you go to our special offer, $55 in postage coupons. That means you get free postage. $55 worth of free postage for you to use over the first few months of your Stamps.com account. What's nice is all of the forms are printed out, too. Here's what you do. You go to Stamps.com. You click that microphone in the upper right-hand corner. You enter the offer code, the promo code TWIT. Very important you do that because we have a better deal. You're going to get a $110 bonus offer that gives you a chance to try Stamps.com, get the scale, get the postage, get a supplies kit, everything you need to use Stamps.com. It looks better, too. I have to say, it makes you look more professional. Whenever I buy stuff, sometimes I buy stuff from Etsy and it comes like with handwritten with like a lot of stamps going on around the side and twine. And that's nice. It's cute. But it would be nice to have exactly the right postage and a label that's printed with your logo. If there's forms to be filled out, customs forms for international or certified mail forms, Stamps.com does that for you. It takes the address you're shipping to from the webpage, so there's no typos. It puts your return address in there. It gives you exactly the right postage with the scale. I mean, it's fast. And you do it all at your desk. I want you to try it. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, offer code TWIT for our $110 bonus offer. If you're not using Stamps.com, you're working too hard. Stamps.com. We thank them for their support. So you've been watching the Olympics, David?
I have been watching some of the Olympics. And the thing that impressed me was this story that says there's 6,800 hours on 11 channels and God only knows how many individual feeds. They've reprogrammed cable boxes to make them Olympics boxes because the cable company owns the content.
Comcast owns NBC Universal, which is, of course, the company that owns the Olympics in the United States.
And they are betting the company sort of on the Olympics and the future of television as expressed through these Olympic Games.
Wow.
That's just wrong. I have said for a zillion years that a company that provides carriage should not be allowed to be in the content business, and we're really finding out why that is. That all of our content is now being owned by people who do carriage, are significant parts of it. And that's, you know, if we talk about net neutrality, what is that? I mean, it's just evil bad, and I'll just stop there. Comcast is an evil bad company. And they are. If you ever do business with them, you'd know that.
Well, you know, I tried to watch the Olympics on TV. This is not to your point, and maybe it's not cranky enough, but it was terrible. It was all interviews with what's his name, the swimmer, and you know, building up the usual thing. They focus on the Americans and choose a hero and do a lot of interviews and try to build up some drama. The good news is that you can watch what you want to watch on the app, which is actually pretty good. The NBC Sports app shows you what's playing, and you know, if you're into table tennis, have I frozen?
No, you're good.
Or you know, I wanted to watch Serena Williams beat this Australian woman, and it's all there in high def and without commentary, and it's actually quite good. I don't spend a lot of time watching sports, but it was striking how bad the television was and how good the web version was.
To be fair, NBC every 2 years does this, ruins the Olympics. Yes. They time shift it. They jam in more commercials than you can eat. At least they've got an internet strategy that gives you a chance to see some less watched stuff without interruption.
I'd love to see some stats about how many people are watching it.
I'm sure it's moving that way, right? But I completely agree with you, David, that Comcast, it's anti-competitive. They should never have been allowed to buy NBC Universal in the first place. And it's ridiculous that they own the cable box and then they are going to be, broadcasting the Olympics. And
well, as an AT&T customer, I can't get what's on their cable box.
Right, right.
Which is good in some ways and bad in other ways. I mean, the government has just so messed up media ownership.
It's just asleep at the switch. It does.
Starting with radio and television, and you know, how many stations can one company own? Well, it turns out 1,000, but they can't afford to run any of them. They're no longer local. The company's almost going bankrupt.
It's horrible.
Both of them. Yeah, both iHeartMedia and Cumulus are both in deep trouble. And the public ends up getting screwed because nobody was there to tell the money people, no. No, you can't do this. This is bad for the people who you're supposed to be serving.
Right.
Just as simple as it is.
And what's wonderful about the way it turned out is that we happen to be in what I believe is the golden age of television with these wonderful series.
Mostly over the top, mostly not on the cable, mostly from internet companies like Netflix and Amazon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The great stuff has moved on, and it's not on ad-supported television.
And to answer your question, ratings for the opening ceremony, that's the only thing we have right now, we're off 28% from last time.
Well, it was a pretty bad opening ceremony, too.
It's always bad. It's always kitschy and silly. And you got it's a little bit like the Macy's Thanksgiving parade with the parade of the countries.
Not the Chinese opening ceremony. That was impressive.
That was pretty amazing. Yeah. London had 28% better ratings. So maybe Comcast is getting its.
Well, they went to this light effect in Rio because they didn't have any money to do the opening ceremony. So they did all of that light stuff.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how you make an opening ceremony boring. I think some of it was Brazil lecturing the world on environmental stewardship. Is that the same Brazil that I've been thinking about for the last two decades?
You know, the one that's destroying
the
Amazon?
The rainforest?
Yeah,
burning down the rainforest. Is it that Brazil we're talking about?
Comcast, of course, being sued by the state of Washington, a $100 million lawsuit against Comcast, accusing the company of 1.8 million violations of the state's Consumer Protection Act. That is overachieving, really. That is quite impressive. The state isn't saying the customer service was bad, but for misleading practices. And anybody who's gone to Comcast and been offered various weird packages like the $4.99 per person service protection plan, which Comcast, that's per month, by the way, $4.99 per month per person service protection plan, which is, according to the Washington Attorney General, near worthless. Comcast promoted the plan as a single fee program that would cover all service calls, including those involved in wall wiring. However, any work on wires concealed within the walls requiring wall fishing was excluded. which means, in fact, you have to pay for in-wall service calls. If we have to get the wire, no, that's going to cost you. and on and on and on. And anybody's ever dealt with Comcast, especially over the phone, I have to say, when you go into the Comcast store where there's actual people, this underscores really what I've been realizing. When people are face to face, or they have to use their real name and the real persona, they're almost always unfailingly nice. It's when they're hiding behind the phone, or you know,
the internet.
Or behind a handle, that they can be the jerks that I think we all have deep within inside. Comcast also, now this is a new story, just came out, wants to sell your web history. Comcast is telling the FCC that they, like AT&T, I didn't know this, want to offer reduced cost plans for customers who say, hey, you can track our web history, search activity, and other online behaviors and sell them to the highest bidder, for which I will get a lower fee for my service.
Well, you know, there is something good about that.
They're doing it anyway. You might as well get something for it. Is that what you're going to say?
Right. Finally, someone's putting some value on the information that they're gathering.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's being taken for free.
Do we know anybody in the chat room who is accepting AT&T's offer of lower cost service in return for, you know, collecting information about you? Is anybody doing that? Doesn't seem like huge.
Well, Amazon does a variety of that when they sell you a Fire tablet with ads.
For nothing, for $50.
If you'll take the ads, they'll give you $15 off lifetime for the cost of the device, but whenever it's not turned on, it's going to be showing you advertising.
Right. And after all, I think we all know that Google and Facebook are making that trade-off. It's a free service. You get a lot of great free services, but there's a cost in terms of
privacy.
Well,
that brings us to, I have a client that is in the native advertising business, so I am disclaiming that, but
native advertising is ads posing as content.
Well, that's the dodgy definition that everybody uses, and it turns out that a lot of companies are being dodgy. There, I saw a study, I'm going to do a blog post on it, that says lots and lots of native content, which is also that content recommendations, all that garbage at the bottom of an average web page, all of that is the Taboola, the Outbrain, neither my client. That's all what we're talking about. But, you know, they and the newspapers particularly are just recoiling at the rise in ad blockers. Supposedly 20% of mobile users have an ad blocker on, and the New York Times and some other sites are starting to trap ad blockers and say, no, if you're going to block our ads, you're not going to see our content because we got to make money off the content.
Well, and Facebook and the Federal Trade Commission now are being very clear that you have to be over and above. You have to really tag stuff as native as an advertisement. It's getting more and more difficult to pose as content. Facebook says you have to have information in the post that says this is an ad. The FTC just announced today that they're going to start cracking down on people on Instagram and other social feeds who don't sufficiently disclaim the fact that it's an ad. For instance, a very common practice is to put the hashtag ad in there, but to put it in a big tag cloud at the end of your post so nobody sees it, or to, instead of using the word sponsor, use the word SP, hashtag SP or hashtag SPON, which is not widely understood, I think, to be a sponsored post. So the FTC recognizes that some of this native content is really just tricking people into believing it's real. It's a big problem on social media.
Speaking of big problems on social media and Facebook, I love that they've deprecated clickbait headlines.
Isn't that great? I could get cranky on Linkbait. I can get real cranky.
Oh, my
Linkbait.
God. Yeah. They had some good examples here.
Facebook is changing its newsfeed again, says CNET, and you'll never guess how. I love it.
What were the examples? It wasn't in the CNET story. You won't believe what's about to happen when you clickbait these headlines.
Yeah.
Jaws dropped. When did Jaws dropping become like headline bait?
Jeff Jarvis often talks about clickbait. He says the thing he hates the most is when it tells you how you're going to feel. You won't believe what happened next. The answer will surprise you. This is amazing. You're going to, you know, and he just hates that.
At Fortune, towards the end in the Chinese phase of that company, we were instructed on how to write clickbait headlines. And the trick, according to the guy who was the expert, was to generate an emotion in the reader.
Right.
And that's what all these things are.
Right.
You know, your jaw will drop. You'll be amazed. You won't, you know, you're...
Here's from TechCrunch. Here's some... examples. Oh, she looked under her couch and saw this. I was shocked. Yes. Or he put garlic in his shoes and what happens next is hard to believe. Or this dog barked at the delivery man and his reaction was priceless.
Right. And the other trick they're using there is to not tell you, you know, to leave out the fact that you have to read the story to get the answer.
Right.
You know, it's not that newspapers didn't do that in the past, but it's when everybody does it all the time, I don't know, it makes my head hurt.
Well, I was talking about this with my wife this morning because I doubt she's old enough to remember the classic New York Post headline, headless body found in topless bar. And
that's a great headline.
But it delivered.
There really was a headless body in a topless bar. It wasn't deceptive.
We never had the kind of deception, you know, in newspapers that is absolutely common on internet today. I mean, I disagree. Philip suggested it, you know, newspapers used to be this way. Well, no, they never really used to be quite this way.
Need to get clicks, right? They just needed you to buy the magazine or the newspaper off the stand so that there was one headline, right, that would get you to buy it.
Well, it was several front page headlines that were as reasonably juiced as they could be, but ultimately had to pay off. On the internet, you know, look how these famous stars, you won't believe, number 6, you know, child stars of the 70s, how do they look now? You won't believe, number 5.
Yeah.
Well, right, I didn't believe number 5. I didn't even go there.
When you go there, you don't get that. That's the main problem. You get 10 other link baits, click baits.
Yeah.
It's really, it's bait and switch 24 hours a day.
So it's always been my opinion that any company that does that as a last ditch attempt to save themselves, because of course, you know, eventually your readers are going to rebel and stop reading your links entirely. Because if you don't get a payoff, we're not rats. Eventually, we are rats. Eventually, you don't get any cheese, you're going to stop pressing the lever. So it's not something you do as a long-term strategy. It's more like desperate, I would guess.
It's been going for 5 or 6 years now.
So. Yes, because there's lots of publishers slowly going out of business. So as each one goes down, you'll see the clickbait. Whatever happened to Upworthy? Are they still around?
Yes, but barely. Hold on, they're doing video now. Oh. Yeah, they say they're doing great with video.
Yeah, we're doing great with video, and you won't believe what happened next. Om, you must have an opinion on clickbait.
I just love what you guys are talking about.
I think Facebook's right to do this because it hurts them too, right?
I hope so. Like, you know, they're doing, or maybe they want people to pay for getting their clickbait headlines to show up.
If you want to put clickbait,
you got to pay.
You got to
buy some ads.
Yeah.
You know, nothing in life is free, not even clickbait.
Let's take a tiny little break, come back with more. We had a great week this week on the network on Twit, and we have created a small mini movie. There is no clickbait in here. This you will enjoy.
Previously on Twit.
No! He dodges the ball, but it is inevitable that he will soon be captured by the Pokemaster.
iOS today.
Mark Gerstein is a viewer, and he said, I want to know what all our apps know about us. I want to know what apps are using my microphone.
Look at that.
So these are...
And you can disable it at that point.
TWiT live specials.
Today, security is not an afterthought. Today, security is far more important with our mobile devices and our always-on networks, which is why we're here in Las Vegas, Nevada for Black Hat 2016.
I wonder why nobody ran after ATM machines, and I actually went and looked at the attack surface of the actual ATMs.
You've created a device that can do the PIN entry, and then it just spat out money.
Oh.
Tech news today.
Owen, you have turned to the emoji dark side. I have proof that you are now a emoji convert.
I hate emojis. I don't like emojis. But you know what? I use emojis with people that I love, i.e. my daughter and Georgia Dow. But if she's going to bash me here on national internet, see, you're spoiling it for everybody. Now, nobody gets emojis again.
TWiT.
Nobody.
We love you.
A great week ahead. Megan Maroney has the details.
Thanks, Leo. There are a few more quarterly earnings reports to look for this week, including Rackspace and Yelp. Plus, it's the USENIX Security Symposium in Austin, Texas, and OpenStack Day Silicon Valley in Mountain View. That's the annual open source infrastructure conference held at the Computer History Museum. And that is just what's happening inside. Astronomers are predicting that if you head outside on August 11th this week, you'll get to see the Perseid meteor shower in all its glory. One final way to celebrate tech this week, it's IBM PC Day on August 12th. This week, in 1981, IBM introduced the Model 5150 personal computer. Let's celebrate. Back to you, Leo.
Wow. Okay, old cranky guys. How many of you had a IBM PC 5150? Anybody? Nobody?
Apple II.
Apple II. Well, then actually, the Mac was already out by the... No, I guess it wasn't. This was 81, yeah. Yeah. I couldn't afford a PC, so I got one of the early clones. I think it was called an Eagle. It was terrible.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
It was terrible.
I had a K-Pro.
K-Pros were cool. I always wanted one of those.
Yes.
Yeah. K-Pro was...
Too many K's and not enough pros. What was the company under?
It was running CPM.
Yes,
they say
was.
That people that carried K-Pros around still have a tilt to their body.
Because it was a 30-pound portable. We've come a long way. What was your first computer?
It was a Windows 3.1.
Oh, boy.
Computer. I can't even remember the name of the brand. It was just some no-name
Leading
brand.
Edge.
Yeah, remember Leading Edge? And Packard Bell.
No,
Packard
it was,
Bell came back for a while.
It was something worse than that.
PC's Limited.
No, I just bought it from a guy, you know, with like
some guy.
I think he put it together and sold it to me. Actually, it was not Windows 3.1. It was Windows MS-DOS.
Oh, yeah. Well, so it was right about that era then, the early 80s.
You did that in Austin, Texas. The guy was Michael Bell. So
yeah.
That's who it would have been.
Out of his dorm room, right?
And yeah, out of the trunk of his car.
Really?
Yes.
Do you want to buy a PC? I got some great ones in here.
Is there some guy in the 30th Street or 34th Street or 35th Street in New York? Like, this was when I was living in New York.
Yeah, $5 watches and Windows 3.1 PCs.
No, it was like somebody who was like in one of these buildings. You had to go up to his office.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my Lord. Like,
and what did you want to do with it? Why did you think this was a good idea?
I just, you know, wanted to learn a few things, you know, use it for word processing also. Learn a little bit of basic.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was early days. Did you notice, like, this was 25 years ago when the web was, the first website went up?
25 years ago. Wow.
This week. So.
Wow. So there you go. This is a bunch of anniversaries. We've come a long way. The first website went online. What was the first? Was it Tim Berners-Lee? Yeah, there's Tim. Yeah. Sir Tim, I should call him now. It was a basic text page with hyperlinks. He was a physicist, worked at CERN at the particle lab, and he wanted to share papers with colleagues and let them annotate them as well as read them. So he created the World Wide Web on that. That's a Next Cube.
Yeah.
It's one computer I never owned. Wish I had, though. I'd love to
have it. Man, that looks so good.
Yeah, beautiful. Didn't work so good, I think. That's Steve Jobs in a nutshell, man. It sure looked good.
It didn't come with a hard drive. Yeah. It worked. So.
Yeah, it worked so good, but man, did it look pretty while it was crashing.
It's a little ahead of its time.
Maybe that's it. And after all, hey, if that's the only thing people did with an Xbox is write the World Wide Web.
Pretty damn good.
That ain't bad.
Right, and it led to OS X, too.
That's true, because next step, the operating system became OS X. Absolutely.
I have to say, as a cranky old, you know, person... God, I miss Steve Jobs, man.
Yeah. He made it interesting.
Yeah.
Well, earlier during the Apple discussion, I was going to ask the question, what would Steve Jobs do? When Steve died, there was a lot of discussion over how much product pipeline is there.
I think we agree the watch was the last thing he might have touched, right?
He had talked about television.
I read recently that he was talking about a car, too.
That, by the way... I'm sorry, is the stupidest thing Apple can do. If you think it's bad that they're doing a TV show, reality show about apps, the car, Project Titan, is even worse.
Well, we disagree there.
Really? I think that's getting your eye off the ball big time. That is such a long, that's a moonshot.
Yeah, well, and you know, one stock that I would short is Tesla.
Really?
Yeah.
I just got a Tesla. I love it.
I know. Well, you love it. You know,
I think Elon Musk is the new Steve Jobs. He's the most interesting guy out there doing the most interesting things with the broadest, longest-term vision of them all. Why SpaceX? He wants to harvest trillion-dollar asteroids.
Have you read the book about him?
Yeah, Ashley Vance's book. Yeah. I interviewed Ashley as well.
I knew Steve Jobs, and he's no Steve Jobs.
Okay. All right. He's not as arrogant, anyway. No, Steve was a piece of work, and I think fun, not so much to work for.
He's fun to watch.
Fun to watch, and that's one thing Steve did that none of these Jeff doesn't do, Mark doesn't do. He really he put on a show. He knew how to put on a show. And that's really, I think, as tech journalists, that's what we really honor him for, is there was nobody better. He was the P.T. Barnum of technology. There was nobody better at putting on a show. That's all I'll give him, frankly.
So that's our third obituary of the...
Well, he died a while ago. I think he's been gone for a while. Meanwhile, you can now put a phone in your pocket that has 10 times the power of any of those early computers, 1,000 times, 100,000 times. Samsung announced this week its Galaxy Note 7 with an iris scanner. So you can just look at your phone and it'll go, I see you, I know you. Unclear how well it will work, although my colleagues who were at the event said it worked very well and very fast. We've seen iris scanners in phones before. Most notably, the Windows phone, the 950 and the 950 XL from Microsoft, which was terrible. Today on the radio show is like your dad taking a picture. Get a little closer, not a little farther. Up, look up, look up. No, look down. Left, right. Nobody wants to do that. But apparently, the iris scanner, the Galaxy Note 7, will pick up your iris, even if you're not looking directly at it. But I tell you, this is just another example of how we are really at peak computing. I mean, hard to come up with something new, isn't it?
Well, how can you say that? Dude, have you seen...
I'm jaded and old.
No, 25 years, internet was just... Web was just...
True.
Like a document which, you know, Sir Tim put on the internet. And today it's in our pocket. And we do... Amazing things.
Yeah, but it's been in our pocket for some time now. What have you done for me lately?
we've only barely started to figure out what to do with all the information which is out there. We barely figured out how to use all these sensor-related data which we get from our phones. I mean, we've barely scratched the surface. I am more excited about technology today than I was 5 years ago, and 5 years ago I was more excited about the future I was 10 years ago. I just feel, you know, we will never be peak human intelligence. We will never, you know, despite what people say about artificial intelligence, the human brain is still not understood what it's capable of. I think it is an amazing, amazing time to be in technology. I wake up every day and I'm still excited about it. I am still excited about the idea that some kid somewhere is going to blow our socks off and we will rethink the future again. I think that is what makes this industry what it is. It's like, you know, we started off with a guy like Blake who decided that he wanted to watch his favorite basketball game and baseball game while he was in Japan. So he invented play shifting. And I think there'll be some guy who will come up with another new thing, and or a gal, or, you know, whether it is in US, it's in China, who the hell knows? But the future is, you know, yet to be invented.
I love that optimism moment. Of course, that's true.
Can we end the show now?
No, I have one more ad. But then, actually, before I want to do the ad, but before we go, I want to give you a little time to think during the ad. I agree with you, Om. And the problem is right now what we see is a lot of, you know, shiny new attempts like VR that maybe just really aren't going to change the world. So I'd like you guys to talk about when we come back. We don't know who that person is, what garage they're working in or what they're working on, but maybe you have some thoughts about what areas, what direction will be interesting in the next few years. I would love to hear what you guys think, because I agree with you. I agree with you, Om. I think there's a lot to be positive about. There's also a lot of junk, right?
Yeah, there is. And, you know, the great thing is where there is junk, there is an opportunity.
You play Pokemon Go, Om?
Oh, love it.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? That, who would have thought? I mean, that came out of nowhere, right? I was in San Diego on Thursday night driving down Coronado, which is a long peninsula leading to a naval base. And there's on Orange Avenue, there's a median strip. And apparently, just by act of chance and Niantic, there are, I think, three or four Poke stops and a Poke gym in one small area. And, in fact, every time we drove by it, we noticed there were lures on the Poke Gym. On Thursday night, must have been 10 p.m., we'd gone to see a play. And we came out of the play, took an Uber home. It's like Woodstock. I'm looking at Lisa, what's going on? And then we realized, oh, they're all going like this. They're all swiping up with their finger. There are literally, in a tiny area, 1,000 people jammed together playing Pokemon Go. $200 million in 1 month in global revenue. 1 month. Well, maybe that's the next big thing. Anyway, your next big thing when we come back. First, let's just briefly say you got to back up your data. I get calls so often from people who say, you know, there's something on my phone or my hard drive. I have pictures. The drive died. What do I do? And I have to say, do you not have a backup? How could you not in this day and age have a backup? And really, the best backup should be cloud backup, right? I mean, it's great to have a local backup. I do it all the time. But ideally, you have a backup that's stored off site. So if the worst happens, a fire, a flood, somebody comes, steals your stuff. The easiest way to do this is Carbonite. Carbonite Online Backup. This was created by a David friend, a good friend of mine. I really like this guy. He I think he created the ARP synthesizer. He'd kind of semi-retired. He had a daughter in college. He called him up and said, Daddy, I just lost my term paper. I don't have a backup. What do I do? And he thought, with all the things we've solved in personal computing, we haven't really figured out a good solution for this. So he founded Carbonite, automatic, continuous, off-site backup, cloud backup. And he did it right, too. He made it flat fee pricing, so you don't have to worry about how much have I backed up, how much am I storing, what's the bill going to be next month. You pay once a year, $59.99 for everything on a single computer. That's less than $5 a month for your Mac or your PC. But they have server backup. They do small business, big business. They have a plan for everyone. This stat just depresses the heck out of me. From the Carbonite website, 30% of people have never backed up anything ever. And I'd say twice that number are backing up in a way that's not going to work. They're not going to get their data back. You got to try Carbonite. And with ransomware all over the place in the Windows space, Carbonite is the solution because it does versioning on Windows, which means you will never have to worry about ransomware. Over 500 billion files backed up and counting, 1.5 million homes and businesses. You got to try it, and you could try it for free. You don't even need to give them a credit card. Just go to Carbonite.com and use the offer code TWIT. The only reason I want you to do that is that way you get 2 months free if you decide to buy. Automatic cloud backup. You can check in with your data anytime you want using the Carbonite apps on your smartphone. You can even download and email data, so it's kind of like cloud storage too. Or you log onto your Carbonite account on any computer. There's your stuff, so you always know it's safe. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Do you play? For some reason, I feel like David Corsi, you do not play Pokemon Go.
I think it's a public nuisance.
That's what I would
thought. Go right ahead.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yes. I don't know how I knew that. And Philip, I'm guessing you haven't played it either.
Oh, I have to try. I had to try it. And then I decided life was too short.
Yeah. Knife's never too short for a great game, but the real winner in Pokemon Go, it turns out the battery, smartphone battery sales have gone up 101% in the 2 weeks from July 10th to July 23rd, year to year over year, doubled. And you know why? Because it kills your battery and people want to sit out there on Orange Avenue and play Pokemon Go all night.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. I'm perfectly fine with something which gets me moving.
Well, I have to say that's the thing I find most interesting. When you go down and you see all these people, it's like there's a rock festival going on, except it's not. They're just hanging out, and they're talking to each other. There's a great feeling, a great vibe in the air. It was kind of cool. It was really like kind of Woodstock in the middle of just this. And the same thing in parks all around here. Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, Central Park in New York. It's people are walking and they're talking. So I'm all for it. It is clearly a phenomenon. Here's a graph from Sensor Tower. Estimates, of course, because nobody's talking, on the top grossing mobile games. Whoops, didn't mean to scroll down so fast. The good news is Candy Crush Soda, which you thought was doing pretty well. That's the baseline there. That's the pink line. There's Clash of Clans, even better. Here's Pokemon Go, which matched Clash of Clans in the first 2 weeks of its release. But then they launched in Japan, and the afterburners came on. And now, according to Sensor Tower, $225 million in revenue.
Can I ask a dumb question?
For a free game. Pokemon? Yeah.
Can people participate in the placement of these pokies? I mean, can I start distributing them?
No. Nope.
Huh.
Although small businesses have really benefited from this because you can put a lure up, and a lure attracts Pokemon. And so if you're a small business like we are, we have a pokey stop right across the street here. I could put a lure on it. If you're a coffee shop, you put a lure. In fact, I've seen bookstores in town. Our local independent bookstore say, hey, we're going to have a lure at 2 p.m. Come by, have a cup of coffee, read a book, and catch some Pokemon. So
individuals could do that too.
Yeah, anybody could buy a lure. It's a buck.
Oh, you buy them. Ah.
Oh, now you know where the $220 million came from.
So how long is this going to last? What is the fad element of Pokemon Go?
Is it like Facebook, just a fad?
Well, Facebook will last longer.
Facebook did it. I don't know. Who knows? No one knows. Facebook did an interesting thing that might have been kind of controversial. They just imitated Snapchat. One of Snapchat's interesting features that was added more recently. You know, Snapchat allows you to do video and pictures and message people, and the pictures and video disappear after the people look at it. So it's kind of a way for young people to send messages to each other more privately. They don't last forever. Young people love Snapchat. Instagram, which is, part of Facebook's problem is its audience is aging. Kids think it's mom's social network. They don't want to be on it. Although I think everybody uses it anyway. They may not be thrilled about it. Instagram has a little bit of a younger skew, a lot smaller market. So they've added a feature of Snapchat called Stories. Stories allow you to do Snapchat videos and pictures that last longer and can be viewed again and again. Snapchat's Stories disappear after 24 hours, so Instagram did pretty much exactly the same thing. copycats or good move?
The Facebook convergent evolution. Win this one.
Well, it's good for face. I'll tell you what. And by the way, Kevin Systrom, who created Instagram and sold it to Facebook, said, "Look, yeah, we're copying them. We're really impressed with what Snapchat has been able to do, and we'd like to do a little of the same thing." I think the only risk is that Instagram works so well as just a, you use it all the time, Mom. I see your wonderful pictures all the time. It works great as a photo album that you share with friends. You have a risk of making it too complicated.
I agree. I think they're taking a big risk, but that's what Facebook does. They take a lot of risk. They do things which are not very appealing to their customers, and they will push.
And a lot of it's copying stuff, right? They've done this all the time.
They have not been able to invent a single new internet behavior, right? So it doesn't matter whether, you know, copy or not. That's the power of being a big platform, is that you can copy and hope that it will work. So actually, they did a pretty decent job of this new app. I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, having two different things at the same time, like Snapchat and Instagram at the same time. But it's still a pretty decent job of producing an app. And, you know, let's see how it goes. I still like to use Snapchat because it only has a few of my friends, and I'm happy to share with them all my, you know, personal stuff and not just randomly share it with all these, like, 20,000 plus people who follow me on Instagram. So for me, that's definitely an added advantage. Privacy is an added advantage on Snapchat.
Last week, we talked about the fact that Theranos founder and CEO Elizabeth Holmes was going to go into the lion's den, present at the American Association for Clinical Chemistry's annual convention in Philadelphia. People thought, what's she going to do? Defend Theranos, which is being investigated now for fraud. And instead, she pulled a little clickbaity kind of a bait and switch. She didn't talk about Theranos' diagnostics, their blood drop diagnostics at all. They pitched a new technology called the Mini Lab, a device the company says will be able to perform blood diagnostics remotely. It's the next phase of our company, said Elizabeth Holmes. Mm. Wow. That's ballsy.
Would that be the phase that actually works?
You know, I think that's great. If under it, this is jujitsu. She went in the lion's den and went wah wah wah, and whew, they just did something else. I mean, I'm not a fan. I wouldn't invest in Theranos, but interesting. Any thoughts? No. How about the company that just got approval from the Federal Aeronautics Administration to go to the moon? Moon Express just got approval. Mission approved, they say, to send a unmanned rover to the moon. The first private company to venture beyond Earth's orbit.
And do they think they'll make money?
I don't think there's any money on the moon. They want to do commercial lunar exploration. Maybe there's valuable minerals. Resources. Minerals? How do you... Yeah. The problem Gold. Is getting them back. Because it's easier to get them back than it is to go there in the first place. But
yeah, the gravity's less.
Right. The real cost is launching, right? They got mission approval from the Secretary of Transportation and... The federal government will help provide supervisory obligations under the Outer Space Treaty. And I don't know, it's going to be in 2017, the first commercial lunar mission.
I'm not sure that's the technology that's going to really change things.
Well, and I have to say, when I see the picture of the president and CEO of this company, Bob Richards, I have to wonder... Is this the man that's going to take us back to the moon, really?
The man with a Zeppelin in his hand?
He's standing in front of course, the big Zeppelin hangar in Mountain View that was part of NASA Ames. I think Google now leases it for Larry.
Oh, the humanity of it all.
And with that, and that image in our head, we wrap up this edition.
That was
Is that
really
a Zeppelin
cranky.
In your hand, or are you just never mind?
Bob Richards.
I did think, Leo, about your question about...
Oh, I forgot. Okay, let's wrap that. You're right. Thank you very much, Philip, for saving me, because I would have gotten home tonight and went, oh, I forgot. We were going to talk about the next big thing. So each of you can wrap up the show with your idea. What is the next? Where is the next big thing coming from, Philip?
I think we might all say the same thing. I think the self-driving car, as far off as it is, and the resistance that we're going to experience getting there, has the potential to disrupt so many things, starting with truck drivers.
Out of work, truck drivers.
Yeah. I mean, more people may be displaced out of work by this than anything if it happens. And on the other hand, a lot fewer people are going to end up roadkill.
Good point.
So there you go.
You agree, David Corsi? What's the next big thing?
Security problems, maybe for the election.
Oh, you know, I think you're absolutely right. And actually, I do believe that the Republican campaign is setting the stage for if it doesn't actually happen. We're using a lot of voting machines which are horrifically insecure, and I think we're going to see a drumbeat from Mr. Trump's campaign that the election will be thrown because of it. So
whether especially if he doesn't win that election,
yeah. Well, if he wins, I don't think he'll raise the issue.
Oh, he's raising it now. We'll have about 40% of the vote that's going to believe that the election was stolen from them. And that is the kind of thing that undermines a democracy.
Yep.
Really badly.
Who was it? Was it Bruce Schneier? One of our great, maybe Brian Krebs. I think it was Schneier who said, we must today eliminate electronic voting, you know, the computerized voting machines. There's far too many in use, and they have far too few security protections. Computerized voting, and this is interesting from a technologist but a security expert, is a terrible idea. And we've got, yeah, there it is, Bruce Schneier, the security of our election systems. He called for basically eliminating them now before this becomes an issue. That's not going to happen, unfortunately.
I think when Trump said the election was rigged, I think he was talking about the Electoral College, not...
Not
Russian cyber.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a lot of ways to interpret it. We'll just wait and see what happens. If he wins, then it's okay.
If he wins, we're all in.
How about you, Om Malik? What do you think is the next place to look for that special paradigm shift?
I don't know about that. I think there is still so much more which can be done with software and all the new emergent data streams in our planet. I think we've only started to digitize inanimate objects. We've just started to index the real world. Things, we don't even know what will be the next big thing. All I know is that everything which is in the future offers a massive potential. I'm talking about potential, not making predictions, I think.
It's hard to predict because it's because by definition, a paradigm shift is unpredictable. I agree with you. I think Skynet is actually the next big thing. And hold on to your seats, because when you get all that data together with huge, massive computational capabilities, the results may surprise you. And on that clickbaity note, we will wrap up today's show. What a pleasure. Always a thrill to have you guys on. Philip Elmer DeWitt, he's at PED30.com. That's his new Apple 3.0 site. Going well. You could subscribe, but he's doing the same thing Ben Thompson does, right? You were inspired by Ben, I think.
Yeah, a little different. He does one free post a week. Mine go free after 3 days.
Oh, I like that. So if you don't mind reading it a little later, you can read it. But if you want to read the latest, you subscribe. How much is a subscription?
$10 a month.
Good deal. Very good deal. I wish you all the best. I love seeing, as I did, people, you know, kind of leaving the mainstream and creating their own business out of it. I think that's definitely the way to go. So thank you, Philip.
My pleasure.
David Corsi has nothing to promote, nothing to plug. He just comes on out of the goodness of his own heart. It's always a great pleasure. Oh, I know. You want a microphone.
I will live without a microphone. Obviously, I have one.
I'll send you one. Do come back soon. Really, nothing at all? Do you want to?
Not right now. I'm working on something.
Ah.
And gee, I'm hireable, but I'm working on stuff.
I like working on something. You can follow him on Twitter at Tech Insider. Not Insider. Insider.
Except I don't Twitter very much. I'm not a big Twitter fan.
Well, then forget it. I don't either.
Yeah, find me on Facebook.
I respond to people on Twitter once in a while, but I don't spend a lot of time there anymore. It's not where I'm watching the Olympics, let's put it that way.
I talk to you on Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook. I respond to Facebook messages, actually.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. Nothing else. Don't try to
thank you.
Yeah. It's always good to see you, David. Thank you.
Good evening.
Let's hear a little bit more about PI.co. That's O'Malley's blog. I didn't know about it, but you've been interviewing some great people.
Yeah. And, you know, I just feel that after being immersed in tech for so long, I wanted to interview people whose professions or whose ideas are, bring together, art, architecture, culture, and technology together. So this has been a fun series of, like, Liam is the guy who taught me a lot about logistics, and Chris talked me, Chris Young, which is the latest interview, he taught me a lot about the future of food and, kitchen and what connected kitchen looks like in the future and sous vide and stuff like that. So he's a chef. He's also an inventor, and he wrote a book called The Modernist Cuisine. So it's just like great, great people I get to interview and have smart conversations with. And there is no real agenda behind it. I just like doing these conversations with smart people. This is not a web, it's not my publication. This is just people I love and love to talk to.
I think that's so great. It's one of the reasons I love doing Triangulation, one of the reasons I love doing this show. It's really great to get together with interesting people with great minds and just talk. There's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, I don't really professionally write anymore. So I don't want to make advertising as source of income ever again. I think it hurts my thinking and like I don't want to be part of it. But I write for The New Yorker now, which is really a lot of fun.
Love your New Yorker articles.
And the editors are amazing. They push me. They've taught me new ways to think about things and how to write better. So that is fun. But I really, really, Pico is where I put a lot of, personal spare time into. And, I'm going to start doing a podcast in a couple of weeks. It'll be called PicoCast. And same interviews you read, I will also have them in audio form as well.
I'm excited about that. Welcome to the club. That's great.
I'm learning from you, Leo.
I know you're not, but okay, thank you for saying that. But I'm really glad you're doing it. I think that's fabulous. Will people, if they go to pi.co, find out about the podcast when it comes out?
Yes, they will. And hopefully, I'll send you a link and maybe you can offer some feedback as well.
And you can come back anytime, all three of you. Always a pleasure. We do Triangulation. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2200 UTC. If you want to watch live, you certainly are invited to. We have a live stream on our website, twit.tv/live. We have a secondary stream with a different player for people who have trouble with that one. It's live.twit.tv. You can also watch live on, there are a lot of platforms for watching live on Apple TV, on Roku, pretty much anywhere you want to be. Just look for the Twit app. There are many, many Twit apps out there. We didn't write any of them. I just thank our great community for writing those. If you're watching live, you should join us in the chat room too, irc.twit.tv, be part of the conversation. It's always great to have you there. You can even be in studio. We have a live studio audience, a nice studio audience this week. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure we get a chair out for you. And you do want to do that because we only have how many more weeks here? One more week in the studio? Yesterday, we had a couple come by. They said, we're sorry we're late. We went to the new studio. So that was a little premature, but we are moving. Our first show from the new studio will be August 21st. The new studio is still in Petaluma. It's just a few miles from here. It's not far. And we can give you directions. If you email tickets at twit.tv, we can make sure you get here and that we have a place for you to sit. I don't yet really know how big it will be. I think my sense is we could easily get the same size audience in there. But we'll have to – well, we don't know yet. We have to see. So, again, we're going to be here on the 14th, and that's going to be the next week, the last Twit in the Brick House Studios. We will be in the East Side Studios, the new East Side Studios, starting on the 21st of August, 2016. Huh? This is the penultimate show, ladies and gentlemen. we're just looking for ways to use that word in an English sentence. Thank you all for being here. Of course, if you can't be here and you get confused about the time or where we are, it doesn't really matter. We're on the internet. Just subscribe. Make sure you get every episode. You'll find more at twit.tv, our website, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Another Twit.
This is amazing.
It's in the can.
Yay.
Doing the Twit. All right.